Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You've come this far. Out there.
Welcome to Dragoncast.
You're not going to scare us.
Scared him.
Whilst we're waiting for House of the Dragon Season 2, Jamie East and Chris Mandel dive into some acclaimed series just ripe for a bit of analysis. In this episode, we'll be looking at HBO and Sky Atlantic's critically acclaimed and hugely popular adaptation of the game series The Last of Us. Hey everybody, welcome to what we are renaming Last Cast for this episode. At least, I'm Jamie East and...
And I'm Chris Mandel, just taking my hat off because I'm a bit warm.
I've committed now. And this episode, obviously you're used to us talking about the House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones or even the OA, but we wanted to talk about this because it's arguably, even though it is only mid to end of January... Arguably, one of the TV events of the year. It came out last Monday, the 16th. Episode 2 of The Last of Us aired 2 a.m. UK time today, and we just wanted to talk about it. A, because it's a big event television. Second, because it has some, not just trivial connections to Game of Thrones, and B, because really fucking liked it. Chris and I went to a special screening of it. When was that? That was 2 weeks ago?
It was, 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
2 weeks ago at the BFI IMAX. And it was a good old Sky Atlantic HBO launch. There were actors there. There were props. There were all sorts going on. Goodie bags. Did you wear your Last of Us beanie?
I do wear my Last of Us beanie. It's very nice. Very comfy. I like it a lot.
Mine got snaffled up by the kids. Straight away.
That'll happen.
I do have a Last of Us tin mug as well.
Quite good. That would be good, that mug, for just hitting a zombie in the face if you had to, I think, as well, in keeping with the show.
Bit of background, and later on we will be hearing from Craig Mazin, who's the creator, showrunner, and director of The Last of Us. But a bit of background first to those that haven't really kind of caught up with it yet. To put it bluntly, it's a pretty straightforward game adaptation of a game by the same name, which came out, I think, in 2013, I want to say, which kind of tore up the rule books in terms of how good a video game can be. And put it this way, even I, as like someone over the age of 25 and who is absolutely shit at video games, could play it and enjoy it. It's narratively, it tells the story of two characters, Joe and Ellie, in a post-apocalyptic world whereby there's been a mass event of which we learn about in a bit, which we'll discuss. And it's basically a road movie with Joel, the older guy, taking Ellie across the United States of America in order to achieve a thing. That, in a nutshell, is the narrative of the show. Chris, did you have any background knowledge? Did you come to this forearmed?
I came in fairly unaware of it, really. I knew about the game. I knew the game was massive. I knew that it was about a sort of virus that destroyed civilization, and I knew there were zombie sort of creatures in it. And yeah, I had a rough idea. I thought it was a great... We're going to just talk about episode one, which is the mm-hmm. only one we've both seen, but I really loved the first episode. I mean, I thought it was really intense. There's a sort of start where we see life before the outbreak, or the day of the outbreak, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it's... Yeah. It's really sort of... The kind of scale of it is quite small, and you've got this... it's Joel's birthday, and then he's got, like... just all kinds of domestic things to deal with, and then this massive event happens, and people start getting really ill, and panic and unrest kind of blows up, and Joel, his daughter is shot, right, by an officer who's kind of mm-hmm. a little trigger happy. That was my understanding, is that it kind of...
Yeah, I think he'd been instructed to... just start exterminating suspicious humans that may or may not be infected.
And we skip 20 years ahead. Joel's now kind of working. And society has completely changed, hasn't it? It's like borders.
He's a dealer. He's having to kind of like just earn menial tasks for
rations.
And he's
burning bodies of infected people. We see this kid like wander into... Is it Chicago he is in, or Boston?
Boston.
They see this kid like wander in, and because they don't know if the kid is ill or not, they just like kill him. It's just really brutal. It's like a really savage... uncompromising kind of world, and I think it's a really interesting idea. Ellie is the name of the girl played by
Bella Ramsey,
who was in Game of Thrones. She is kind of this slightly like aggressive, like spunky, like won't take any shit sort of kid, and he's going to escort her across the US to another safe zone where they've got these,
because there's something special about her.
And do we know what that is at this point? Do we talk about this or not?
I mean, look, we're assuming that you've watched The Last of Us episode one. Otherwise why bother listening? We find out that she is seemingly immune to infection. She's got a scar on her arm that is healed. I think there's good kind of exposition where there's like posters on the walls of places saying that if you get bitten in the neck or the head, you've got 5 minutes or something like that. If you get bitten on the arm or the torso, you've got 5 hours. Or if it's on the leg, you've got 5 days or something like that.
And the infected people tend to turn into these sort of, crazed. I don't know if they're using the term zombies. They probably aren't, but these infected, like they bite other people, and it's all kind of a bit rabid and
well. There's a good prologue with John Hannah right at the beginning, which talked about it. Whereas it's not COVID-y style thing, and he explains that it's a fungus, it's a fungal infection, not like your old yeast infections, but it's like whereby these fungal neural take over your neural kind of senses, and you become a host for these fungal thing. And not only that, but actually, which is slightly more avatar-y, all the beings are connected via this kind of neural fungi network, which is, I think, it happens in real life as well. So there's this weird kind of like telepathy style connection between them as well.
And they can
there are various degrees of, there are like, there's the zombies, the human form who've got bitten and now infected and who are kind of like just charging around eating other humans. But then as the series moves on, we see three, maybe four kind of different versions of infected things.
Right.
Okay. These are like level one.
Right. Yeah. The parallels, this sort of way that they impede brain function is really interesting, because there are animals, there are like insects that do this, that can get into, I think on the prologue there's an ant or something, or a spider, where there's like it, the larva or the whatever burrows into the skin, hatches eggs, and then the babies can sort of control, they get into the brain and they cause the spider to spin webs or the ant to do whatever. It is based in some kind of like science, but it's terrifying. And
really terrifying.
I think
it's one of those ones where you go, wow, that's really imaginative. That can't be, that can't,
right.
Could that happen? Could that actually happen? Going to scare myself on Wikipedia. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't watch a lot of these kinds of shows. Like, I didn't do Walking Dead. I haven't played the game. So it's not normally a genre that I'm like really engaged with. I thought it was really good, the first episode. A lot of potential. I've just heard so many good things about where it goes that I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like it might not be a cut and paste, like horror, let's just shoot zombies.
No, I
think, every episode.
Well, The Walking Dead, you know, the first season of The Walking Dead is fantastic. And then the ongoing, I think it was a law of diminishing returns for the next 60 seasons or however long it bloody went on for. Because ultimately it was a pure out and out zombie story where it was group of humans trying to escape zombies. That's the story. Whereas I think what The Last of Us did so well as a video game and now as a TV series was that it could have been, it didn't have to be zombies. It could have been anything. It could have been COVID. It could have been political warfare. It could have been some awful kind of dictatorship. It could have been a new, the threat is largely irrelevant. It's very cinematic and very scary and terrific for gameplay. But actually what the story is about, and as Craig goes on to talk about in a bit, is that it's a story about humans. It's a story about love. It's about companionship. It's about connection. And ultimately that's what we see here. Now, I think the first episode of it is quite deceptive, because what you do get is a very exciting and thrilling and fantastic to watch kind of like origin story, which has elements of World War Z, The Walking Dead, you know, numerous kind of like disaster, you know, outbreak, all of these kind of things that we're pretty well versed and well attuned for. But it was done brilliantly, and having binged through the vast majority of the season already, nothing prepares you for where it takes you.
That's really interesting.
Because it just, you know, I'm certainly not going to give any spoilers away. I think, you know, the episode that just aired today, I think people will have seen, for instance, will have seen more about the threat of the clickers and the different types of zombies, and also
a
bit more about the world that they're in and the relationship between Ellie and Joel.
Yeah.
But for me, and this is a tease ahead to next week for viewers, is episode 3 is just one of the most extraordinary pieces of television I've ever watched. It caught me so off guard that I was absolutely speechless throughout the whole episode. It is just, and I'm not going to give anything away.
It's amazing to hear such a strong response, because it sounds like,
I think they've just been really brave with what they've done. There are capsule episodes. There are kind of like, you know, there are flash forwards, there are flashbacks, there are, you know.
Oh, really? There's flash forwards as well?
Hang on a sec. No, maybe not flash forwards. Hold on. No, but there's certainly flashbacks. There are episodes that seemingly have nothing to do with what you've been watching.
Right.
But the performances are just great. The casting is just on point. You know, Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey, just great, just so fucking good. And we see Nick Offerman, we see Murray Bartlett.
Know those guys were in it until we saw a little bit of footage for the rest of the season after we watched episode one.
Melanie Linsky's in it, who
really
who's risen to fame in Yellow Jackets. A great shout, brilliant casting. Rutina Wesley Now, you probably don't know Rutina Wesley is, but she was in, and I'd not seen her in anything for years, but she appears, I think, in episode 4 or 5, and she was in True Blood. She played one of the main characters in True Blood, which I've not seen. No one ever talks about True Blood anymore.
No.
That was huge. That was absolutely massive. And she's in it as well, which was just an inspired bit of casting. But there are, I'm up to episode 7 or 8 now, and I'm going to say that there are at least like 4 of those episodes should be all nominated for Emmys and Golden.
Wow.
Because they are just fucking great. Just
so does it expand a lot from the game? Is there stuff here that you didn't have?
I think they lean into, so I think as Craig explains, because one of my questions was, how do you stop yourself from just doing the game, like scene by scene? And interestingly, I think what episode 2 does really well is, certainly for my kids who've played the games a lot more than I have, there are moments in it where, like, for instance, there's buildings that they walk into where my kids were just like, oh my God. Sorry, maybe cough. Where they were just like, oh my God, it's that building. And it stayed so true to the way the aesthetic of the game.
Yeah.
And the way that the lighting hits, the way that the water looks, everything about it like really blew my kids' minds, because it was just like, this is like really weird because the game is real. But in terms of narrative, I think they hit all of the main points well. But shown a real dexterity in terms of which bits they lean into from it, because it's not all about the battles, it's not all about the big boss fights, it's about the relationships and the key moments in there. It's very difficult to talk about without people having seen, for instance, episode 3 or I think episode 6.
I think that's where a lot of the zombie or the undead or the infected kind of storylines generally don't appeal to me, is that they're not very compelling antagonists, right?
Well, they're just a bit, once you've established the threat, it's all just jump scares.
So I think it's interesting if it's, the show is not, it's obviously about this in some way, but it's also threading something quite different.
What it does well is through that is that the zombies slash monsters are only a third of the threat to, you know, if you take Joel and Ellie as being the good guys, as being like the viewer and they're taking us on their journey, you've got a threat from like the infected and all of the kind of permutations of that. Then you've got basically Fedra, who are this formed kind of governmental kind of power that oversee society, certainly in America, who seem to be quite not very nice and heavy-handed and pretty grim. Mm-hmm. And then you've also got vigilantes and kind of like human groups that have gone off who are kind of like just wild, who are into cannibalism, into kind of like, you know, just looting and pillaging and all the rest of it. Survivalists, really, who... Mm. So there are all these kind of threats coming at them from all these different angles, and I think that's what allows it to breathe a little more, is that it's not always, you know, in fact, there are some episodes where you're just like, oh shit, I completely forgot that there are zombies in this.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah, it sounds like a bit like a Wild West sort of genre in a way. Like, it's like the lawless society, like... Mm. You know, if it also makes me think of like Mad Max, you know, like just that sort of idea of like everything's kind of got span way out of control. It's every man for themselves. Like, I'm really excited. I'm going to watch episode 2 today.
Cool.
And I'm going to try and do 1 a week. But I think, I'm really, really excited to hear more from your interview and just get a sense of what's going on. And I just think, you know, what I'm really intrigued about The Last of Us is that they've sort of said already, you know, it's probably going to be 2 seasons, because it covers this covers the first game, and season 2 covers the second game. And I think, you know,
he talks about it in the interview, I think it's going to be 3.
Oh, interesting.
Because The Last of Us Part 2, the game, is pretty huge.
Big.
And I think they'd struggle to get that into 1 season.
I think it's also just really refreshing to hear someone go, this is what it is. It's going to be three seasons and that's it. We have a finite amount of story because, yeah, we're just not in that era anymore of like, hopefully it'll go on forever or let's try and do 8 years of it. You know, I also think it's been such a successfully, I should say, I think it's been such a well-received, successful video game adaptation that I think HBO will do a lot more of this. Going forward, they go, okay, we can do this now. What else can we do? And that's a huge audience that haven't been served very well historically that could now see some of their favourite works being adapted for small screens. So, yeah, you know, I think it's very exciting.
And watching it, it could only have been HBO that did it.
Mm.
You know, you watch it and you just think, I can't see Netflix having done this. It wouldn't have looked the same. No. They wouldn't have cast it the same. No. It would have been skewed a lot more towards the gamers.
And
the same for any other channel. I couldn't see any other channel apart from HBO doing it, which is great.
I also would say, you know, there was a movie of Uncharted.
With Tom Holland.
Yeah, with Tom Holland. Absolutely, like, trashed. That feels like, in hindsight, that should have been a TV series. That would be a really smart two-series, small screen, big budget. You know, it may well happen, but, you know, that is, again, 10 years ago, The Last of Us, they'd have tried to make a film out of it and it would have been probably quite bad.
The thing is, and we talk about this with Craig, is that all of those, the thing about Uncharted and Tomb Raider and Sonic and all these kind of adaptations that have already, there's no story there, really.
No.
There's a bit of like a character Bible about Lara Croft or about Drake or whatever, but there's no story there in the same way that in the way that The Last of Us has this incredible like relationship building, like just a story that people who played it cried over and didn't want any spoilers. And I think the only one that maybe the one that's out there that is right for is God of War. Which is another kind of like game's very, very similar in terms of like its epic nature. But listen, we'll play the interview now. I interviewed Craig Mazin, I think 2 or 3 hours after episode one had aired. So he was pretty stoked. And as I said in the intro, he must have been at that moment in time of our interview, the hottest man in television, bar none. Like,
yeah.
Untouchable, on top of the world, and he was in fine fettle. So have a listen to this, and I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think as well, because really intrigued as to what your thoughts are on The Last of Us, because we are looking for other stuff to talk about. The OA isn't going to last forever, and blah blah blah. We want to know what kind of stuff you're into. So have a listen, get in touch at @DragonCast_pod, or leave a comment on the YouTube channel. And excited to hear what you think. Chris, been a pleasure. Don't let the clickers get you.
See you next time.
If you don't think there's hope for the world, why bother going on?
You haven't seen the world.
And you'll hear from Craig after a word from our sponsors.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Craig, the hottest man in TV... As we speak on this day.
You mean hot, like attractive, right? Really good looking.
Babes, I mean hot in every way. Congratulations, first of all. What a triumph. You must be relieved, excited, goodness me. How are you feeling?
Relieved is the perfect word. I mean, it's you forget sometimes over the course of the, in this case, almost 3 years that you spent working on something and not... three casual years, but 3 years with a lot of, 12, 13, 14 hour days. You forget that at some point it belongs to everybody else. And then you find out. And I'm an anxious person by nature. And so the best feeling I get typically is relief. And seeing how well the show has been received, obviously the critics were great, but it's the people out there, it's the fans.
Yeah.
That you fans, both old and new, people that are coming to The Last of Us for the first time, I'm just as interested in making sure that they're happy. And so far it's just been overwhelmingly positive, and that's such a great feeling for me, for Neil, for Pedro, for Bella, and for honestly everybody that worked on the show.
I don't know how you've done it. Like right from the announcement, first of all, as soon as your name was attached, everyone breathed a sigh of relief because we knew we were going to get something quality, that it was going to be well thought out. It wasn't going to be a rush job. You were going to do it with care and attention, from your previous work and whatnot. But every step from the casting, from the kind of set shots that we saw early on, the teases that we've had, you've not put a step wrong. If you could have taken fans like 3-4 years ago and go, okay, like tell us what your ideal version of The Last of Us is going to be on TV screen, they would have literally said this. And I don't believe for a second that you've gone and just paid fan service 100%, because that would be crazy. Therein is the root to madness. But you, like you said, you've pleased all of the hardcore gamers. You have also intrigued people that haven't played the game, and also brought on a whole new generation of fans that just like really cool TV. How have you managed to tread that line so well?
To start with, I am a fan. I've always been a fan. So there were a lot of times where I would sit with Neil and we would talk about, okay, the process of adaptation is can be either an elevating one or a corrosive one. And in our path towards what we hoped would be elevated, a lot of times I would say things like, look, I feel like I need to see this in the show, because if I didn't, then it would hurt me, as a fan.
Yeah.
But you use the word meticulous. I think that's part of my ethos as somebody that makes television shows. There is no detail too small. And I know that is certainly the same with Neil. I remember looking at some early imagery that he was showing me from the game, and there would be these, like, it's just from their development process, like a still frame of a puddle in mud, and he's written 12 notes on how the puddle should be better, and I'm like,
wow,
okay, I have a brother, because that's the way I am about everything like that. And we applied that as well to the way we released information or imagery to the public. I mean, one of the things I know as a fan and as somebody who plays video games and has always played video games my whole life, that when it comes to fandom and something that you are deeply connected to, the way people are with The Last of Us, everyone is afraid. And I don't blame them. I'm afraid too. When I see something that I love being adapted, I have that fear response. So part of what I would say to Neil is, let's be really careful and titrate. That's the word I use. Let us titrate the information that we share when we start, like very deliberately, we said, the first thing we want to put out is an image of Joel and Ellie, but from behind. Yeah. I don't want to see their faces yet. Let's see the hair. Let's see the backpacks. Let's see their posture.
Yeah.
Let people slowly acclimate, because change is really difficult when you're so wedded to something that you love.
Otherwise you get Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there can be that moment of jarring. Oh no. And obviously in the case of Sonic's teeth, they went back and fixed it, and fixed it beautifully.
Yeah.
We were trying to avoid that moment. But I understand all of that fear and concern. I mean, you know, we have families. If you came home to your family and everybody looked sort of different, it would be terribly jarring. So you just gotta ease everybody in as you go. And as people would read things, of course, people, you know, would complain, as is their God-given right as fans, whether they complain because Bella doesn't look enough like Ellie in the game or Joel's beard doesn't fully grow. And I got it. I was like, I hear you. I feel you. I'm one of you. I get it. But what I know is, once you start watching, the great majority of you are going to fall in love with her because she is an incredible Ellie. Mm-hmm. And you're going to fall in love with Pedro because he's an incredible Joel. And things like the beard and the different face and all these things, that will disappear.
Yeah.
And what you'll be like is the drama and the beauty of their performances.
I kind of feel that any red-blooded man complaining about Pedro Pascal's beard, there's something not quite right with them. I think, you know, I think you'd be, it's a lonely argument you're trying to fight there.
Yeah, that's just straight up jealousy. Exactly. I mean, I've got a great beard. You've got a great beard. I'd
trade for his any day. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't inspire the same reaction that he does.
We do not. Speaking of Pedro and Bella, is there like an HBO? We've already done the due diligence on these guys. They're already here. Did it work like that? Did they just happen to both be from Game of Thrones land?
They happen to both be from Game of Thrones land. One of the, you know, more amusing conspiracy theories I read was that, oh, they gave the parts to Pedro and Bella because they already are at HBO and HBO paid them a rent. I was like, that's not how any of this works.
Can you imagine if that works? Yeah, you've got Lena Headey just sat around waiting for season two of The Last of Us goes because her Cersei contract's still running. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's not how it works at all. In fact, you know, I remember when we were doing Chernobyl, we had to like work really hard to not cast too many people from Game of Thrones because we were shooting in Europe and mostly our actors were mostly UK.
Yeah.
And so many of them, just because Game of Thrones employed basically every actor in the United Kingdom.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, we had a few overlaps, not too many. For this, like Ellie is an easy one. We auditioned over 100 girls and Bella was one of the auditions we got. We didn't solicit it any more than we solicited any of them. She put herself on tape in her bedroom. I remember when I saw it, the first thing I saw was like, oh, it's Lady Mormont. I didn't really know her name. I just love Lady Mormont.
You know? Oh God, yeah.
But I was kind of amused, like, oh, Lady Mormont's here. And then I watched her audition and I was like, oh, we got her. And
amazing.
But no, it has nothing. No, it's all coincidence.
My kids sat and watched it and they several times through, I think more episode two than episode one, kind of yelped when, you know, the buildings and the locations and the look and feel of like the museum, the Bostonian Museum, all of those kind of, they kind of gasped in delight because they were so true to like their vision. Now, you obviously worked very closely with the guys behind it. You know, I would imagine, you know, there's a lot of green or blue screen going on and all the rest of it. But something that kind of occurred to me is like, you already have the schematics for all this universe there in code somewhere. How easy was it? Was it tempting or even possible just to go, actually, can we just grab the code, stick it into whatever program you use for HBO, make it look slightly more realistic and it's all good to go, right?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Imagine. So,
Neil Druckmann and I spent a lot of time talking about how to port the aesthetic of the world that the game presents to television. One of the main differences between the way it's done in video games versus the way we do it in television is, in video games, the machinery of the game has to feed you graphics as you turn and look or as you move. It fills the world in around you. because of that, it's only capable of delivering a certain resolution. Simply because it doesn't know where you're going to look at any given point, and it's not possible. The game would be 40, you know, CDs to shove into your machine if you wanted to make everything photorealistic everywhere, whether people were looking at it or not. For us, we choose what you look at.
Yeah.
Therefore, we can put way more resolution and effort into individual shots. And it's all the more important because those shots are being juxtaposed against real people and real places. As much as we could, we tried to create real practical environments for our actors to be in and interact with. And then above a certain height, then maybe we fill in digitally. But we know we couldn't port anything over like that. All we could do, who knows, but it was a big deal, was to take as much inspiration from it as we could.
Yeah. I think the lighting especially is something that really has that the gamic quality rather as well as like a filmic quality. But you know, you kind of half expect like the role of tape and scissors to be kind of like highlighted somewhere on a bookcase. Have we got a scene at some point with someone collecting some tape and scissors from a drawer?
We talk about everything. And you know, the thing about fan service is because I'm a fan, my feeling is the best fan service is when the people who are adapting the material understand what matters to you most.
Yeah.
And bring that through because it's meaningful. Then there's other fan service that's sort of like, okay, hey, I found a roll of tape and some scissors, where people who play the game will be like, oh, they did the tape and the scissors, but it's going to take everybody else out of the game. And even I think the fans would be like, oh, they kind of just stopped to give me a thing that I thought I needed, but I really don't. So actually, part of the philosophy is figuring out what do we think fans will go, oh my God, they did the thing, and I'm so glad they did the thing because it mattered.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of where we kind of aimed our lasers.
And there's already kind of theories, you know, the Easter egg and breadcrumb crew are out in force, and you've been hinting at a few on the official Last of Us podcast. How can you be such a good like filmmaker and a great podcaster as well? It drives me crazy. I love screen notes. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I guess I have a lot of practice. I mean, I've been doing
a long time. Yeah,
the screenwriting podcast with my podcast partner John August for over 10 years. We're up to episode 580 something or 90. I don't know. We're almost at 600 episodes, which
fantastic.
Is fantastic. You'd think the two people just would run out of things to talk about, but not us.
Not us. No. But the theorists are already out in force, and you're hinting at one. The big one I'm sure you're aware of is the flower theory.
Interesting.
With Joel refusing or saying he's on the Atkins diet, they didn't have any of the pancake mix, all of that kind of stuff. Do you enjoy, I'm not asking you to kind of confirm or deny, but do you kind of sit there and kind of have a little wry chuckle to yourself? It's like, oh, this would be great. We'll throw a few of these in.
It's funny. It's the opposite. Sometimes I think, what am I doing? You know, like I don't want to just, the worst feeling would be to just carefully put this thing into place and then no one ever notices or talks about it. I'm a big puzzle solver. I love solving, you know, somewhat fairly complicated puzzles. And I've also authored a few puzzles. And when you do that, your biggest fear as a puzzle constructor is that no one will be able to solve it. Well, then you've utterly failed. If everybody can solve it too quickly, you've also failed. So, you know, it was a little bit nerve-wracking to turn the dial. I'm a big believer that one of the things you have to do as a writer is strike a balance between clarity and mystery, because people need clarity, but they also definitely need mystery. They need to want to know. They need a chance to be curious. The third leg of that three-legged stool is confusion, and that's the one you want to avoid more than anything.
Yeah.
So as much as possible, we aim for either clarity or mystery. And with mystery, there's just the promise that eventually there will be clarity.
Now, you mentioned elsewhere that this has got a finite end. You're not looking, this is not going to be The Walking Dead. You know, your plan is to stay true to the game. But also you've indicated that possibly what is part two in the game wouldn't be possible to fit into one season of of TV. Is that still the case? Are you already looking ahead? Have you already started mapping all of that stuff out?
We're definitely looking ahead. We're definitely mapping. I think things have gone very well. The viewership has been extraordinary. You know, we are essentially 2 days after we aired for the first time, and lots of people have been tuning in over the course of those 2 days, and we expect that will continue. So it certainly looks encouraging for us to keep going. I know that HBO, certainly their great hope is that we would warrant another season. You're absolutely right. The story that is encapsulated in the rest of the material that Naughty Dog has released is not achievable in a season. So the question is, okay, how much more is there, and how do we do it, and what do we want to do? And so we're definitely talking about that right now. Even as I just came back from a sound mix for our last episode of this season, we've still got some visual effects for the final episodes that we're finalizing now. So it's like I'm on the treadmill and looking at this other treadmill right next to me that I'm about to jump on. And
you've started this the juggernaut will not stop now. It will not stop. And you're directing after quite a sizable gap. You know, you directed in the past and then you took a break. Why now? And how are your pants after the first day of that? That must have been a terrifying experience.
You're right. I've directed a few times before. They've always been incredibly difficult circumstances. First time I directed was a little indie film. We didn't have enough money. We didn't have enough time. I didn't have enough experience. It was a mess. The fact that anything came out at all on the other end that was coherent was a miracle. The next time I directed was a similar, I was making a movie for Bob Weinstein, and enough said there. And then, so I had been a bit just generally put off of directing. And when this came about and we needed to, you're casting directors in a sense, at some point it's sort of like, we think we want to cast you as this director. The nice thing is I have other partners. I have Neil and I have Carolyn Strauss and I have HBO, and if enough people are saying you should do it, then, I went into it with a lot of confidence because I had Ksenia Sereda, our cinematographer, who is, I just think she's incredible. I mean, she's both incredibly talented and also just a wonderful person and a fantastic creative partner. So between myself and Ksenia, I felt, okay, we've got this really good basis to proceed through the day. And I had this cast I could lean on. I had Pedro, I had Bella, I had Anna Torv. So I'm like working with these incredible actors. And then there was just this philosophy. And the philosophy was, we're going to attempt to make something great. And when everybody's working to make something great, you all hopefully elevate each other. We all took it quite seriously.
Yeah.
And when I needed things, I got them. And I was oftentimes nervous and oftentimes worried. That's my nature. But I think the worry and the nerves translated fairly well into attention to detail and execution.
You're damn right they did. Yeah, it worked a treat. I asked people online if they had any questions for you. I hope you don't mind if I put some of those to you.
No, go for it. Yeah.
This is from The Dragon Demands, saying you've promised new forms of the infected beyond the four main phases from the first game. What kind of variants are you looking at? I guess that leans into like the tendrils versus the spores and the gas masks. And I think you're right. You made a brilliant choice there. You know, having everyone put gas masks on all the time would have been chaotic. And actually they look strangely beautiful as well. Those tendrils look really, really kind of, you're the lone wolf that's like telling everyone not to do mushrooms at the moment. It's like, it seems like everyone else in the world is like, this is great. This is the future. Lion's mane in my tea. And this is the warning shot.
I hope we don't negatively impact the mushroom industry. They're fine people and they deserve your patronage. When it comes to the different types, I think it's safe to say that, how would I put it? I don't know if I would say necessarily there's going to be an entirely brand new type as much as an interesting twist. That's as far as I'll go.
Okay, great. Lovely. We love an interesting twist, clarity and mystery. And this is from Megan. Megan says, what fans loved so much about the game is the story. And I think, you know, lots of people talk about, oh my God, how has The Last of Us finally done a game adaptation that works so well? It's like, well, duh, the story is fucking great. You know, what do you love most about the story?
Well, for me, Megan, I always think about relationships. So when people will talk about story, and to me, story is a function of changing relationships. Even when people talk about character, I think they're really talking about relationships because we exist in relation to each other. So the thing that blew me away when I played The Last of Us for the first time in 2013 on my PlayStation 3 was the relationship between Joel and Ellie. I had never seen anything realized quite like it. I'd seen archetypes like that. I had seen, you know, parental child relationships and father daughter, but to see how that relationship functioned and changed and grew, to me, that is the beating heart of The Last of Us. That's why it's more than, you know, zombies or stealth or action or shooting. It's this other beautiful thing. It's the reason why people tattoo this game on their skin.
You've got to tackle a bit of a Red Wedding moment pretty early on next season, right? Have you got that blocked out in your head already?
No. No. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. I think we try, you know, and Neil's amazing this way because he's, you know, a lot of people that write source material that gets adapted, they get a precious, which I understand. They can get really finicky and demand fidelity, and they struggle with change. That's not the case with Neil at all. He's remarkably agile and flexible and generous when it comes to the adaptation process. And he's always given me like enormous space to move around and to change and adjust and reimagine, rethink. Or he's also allowed me to say, no, I want to do this exactly the way you did it in the game. But we try and keep our knees bent. Do you know what I mean?
Like yeah.
Ready to move a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right about anything or everything. And sometimes where that brings us is right back to where it was. For instance, you know, the way things turn out with Joel and his daughter and the way we depict that in the first episode, we just, you know, that at least for that specific moment, we landed right back to the way it was in the game because I just thought it was correct.
Yeah.
And didn't need to change, you know, but other things we adjust and we fiddle with. So everything's in process. Our knees are somewhat bent. We're staying flexible.
I can't wait to see where you take that. It's going to be amazing. And finally, I'll leave this the final question from Actual Sigh. It's a great question. The infection hit in 2003. Is Paris Hilton okay?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that all of us watching the show, we're thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Is Paris Hilton okay? She is either running some sort of cult compound, let's say in Florida, or she is a clicker that is moving on a very strict, repeating course around a few rooms in her mansion.
With a load of Von Dutch kind of stuff like attached to her via the tendrils. Amazing.
Unquestionably.
Craig, it's been an absolute honour. I've been such a fan for such a long time. I'm so pleased I got to speak to you. Congratulations on such a triumph, and can't wait to see where the next few years takes us.
Thank you, sir. It was wonderful talking to you today.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daffdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daff Doris production. Drakkar.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.